Greetings this morning in the name of Jesus. It's a privilege to worship with you. I've been thinking for a while of coming to see where Joe's and Kevin and Deborah live, so this is special. I'd like to think this morning about prophets. It's not really a qualifications message. I hope it's remotely here. Something about what you are looking forward to, ordination in your church. What do you think about prophets? Have you ever seen a prophet? Anybody ever seen a prophet? I think you're thinking, well, maybe, but you're not sure. We don't have an office we call prophet. We live in Utah. And we have a lot of Mormons around us out there, and they have, the leader of their church is called a prophet. I have a bit of a negative connotation about that role in their church. I don't know if I should call him a false prophet. I probably would lean that way because of what he believes and teaches. Maybe in your mind's eye, when you think about a prophet, this is a little bit the way my impression of prophets was formed as a child. A roughly dressed, tall, fierce-eyed man striding into downtown from the desert and booming with a loud voice a message of judgment and doom. Maybe pointing a long finger. And there were some men like Elijah and Amos and John the Baptist that it was a little that way. So there's some truth in that impression of a prophet. But you know, if you would look at the different prophets in the Old Testament, a lot of those men were just probably would appear to be ordinary men in a lot of ways. They were princes in the king's court, as Isaiah was. Shepherds, farmers, priests, ordinary men called to an extraordinary job. The job of a prophet, if you would want to put it in a nutshell, it was pretty much that they spoke for God. People in the Old Testament, God's people in the Old Testament, did not have Bibles like we do. And so when God wanted to give them a message, he would send a prophet, and a prophet would speak to them the message that God had given him. That was what a true prophet would do. There were false prophets who would say just about anything, I suppose, whatever they wanted to believe or would have liked to believe or tried to please the king with, things like that. A verse here in Romans chapter 15, verse 4, I want to read to you. You don't have to turn to it. For whatsoever things were written afore time were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. I was thinking a little bit about hope. You know, hope is something really special. If you have a life without hope, you're feeling pretty miserable this morning. Hope. And we gain hope by considering the scriptures. And in this morning, we would like to gain some hope in considering the life of a prophet. Because these men left an example for us. They left a life. They made choices. They endured persecution. They held on to God. And it's an example for us to follow. And it actually gives us hope because in the difficulties and struggles that we face, when we look at the lives of the prophets, we can see how they did it, and we can gain hope from that. So I hope that you can do that this morning. And maybe, probably, there's somebody here in the audience who may be called to be a prophet, and I use this word in a broad sense. You know, maybe it's a deacon here, or a minister, or whatever your ordination is about. I think those roles often do include the work of a prophet. although I wouldn't limit a prophet's calling to a Mennonite preacher, I actually think there's moms and dads who are prophets, maybe even young people sometimes have the gift of being a prophet, as the New Testament defines it. All right. There were three qualifications of a true prophet. Number one was that he had a call from God. That was very important. We're going to look at that here shortly. A true prophet had a call from God. Number two, a true prophet spoke God's message. So it wasn't just a call to be a prophet without fulfilling the role of a prophet, and that was the role of a prophet was to speak God's message. So that was number two. And number three, and this one surprised me a little bit, but it shouldn't have, and that is that a prophet prayed for the people. And I get these three qualifications from a reference book I have. You're welcome to check them out for yourself. A true prophet experienced a call from God, a true prophet spoke God's message, and a true prophet prayed for the people. I would like to take you to the book of Jeremiah. We're not going to be looking at all the prophets. I suppose you're glad for that. I don't know how many of you wade through the prophets in your personal devotions. I think it's good to read them some. Probably you won't just stay in the prophets for a whole year or something like that. But don't ignore the books of the prophets. I know they're difficult. I mean, they take you back into a different culture and long ago, a different setting, and there's a lot of judgment pronounced on Israel for their disobedience and different countries back then, Philistia and Edom and Babylon and Egypt, many more. So it takes some effort maybe to read through the prophets and gain spiritual food, encouragement for yourself. But if you look at these men as persons, just like we are, and they had the same struggles and they had the same fears and they had the same temptations, maybe it can help us gain something valuable, comfort, hope. All right, Jeremiah. I want to read to you a quote from a reference book I have about the prophet Jeremiah. Beginning to read the quote here. This prophet was a deeply spiritual man. He was wholly dedicated to God so that despite a shy and retiring nature, his fervent love for God and his people never waned. Jeremiah became an object lesson of a man whose commitment to God enabled him, by God's grace, to overcome his natural timidity and live courageously in the face of severe opposition and tragic circumstances. His personal sorrow over the messages that he had to deliver often caused him to weep for his people. In a manner, excuse me. In a manner unparalleled until the Man of Sorrows would come. The book of Jeremiah spans around 627 BC to 580 BC, more or less 47 years, pretty much the lifetime of a man. We'd like to consider now the call of a prophet. And as we look at the call Jeremiah had from God, I would like for you to be thinking, maybe especially in relation to your ordination coming up, the call that God gives to men. And God doesn't just call men, he calls women too, maybe to a different role, but who would say that it's any less important? I wouldn't. The call of God to you and to me. Think about that. Remember that the call was an important part of a true prophet's calling. A prophet would go back to the call. When things got tough and the people wouldn't listen and they mocked him and they said, "You're lying to us," a prophet went back to his call. And a prophet would think, "Well, am I just doing this in my own interest? Did I just have this idea that I could be a prophet?" And then he would realize, no, this wasn't a job that I chose for myself. This is something that God called me to. And I'm sure that a true prophet would be very humble in the way that he held that call. But nevertheless, there was a call. And you know, sometimes God would be quiet for years. And this is one blessing we have in the New Testament. You think about it. If you had the work of a prophet and God would talk to you and you would share that message, and then God would just be quiet for a long time. How would you make your way through that? Well, you'd just strengthen your faith, exercise your faith, I guess. You'd think about that call. All right, one more point I want to share with you. I think I mentioned this already, but the work of a prophet was not a job that they volunteered for. It was not a job that they chose. It wasn't even a job that they trained for. You know, now I'm called to be a prophet, so I need to go to the university and study how to do this and learn how. Rather, God came hunting for a prophet. And he appointed the prophet, and he called, and he commissioned. All right, let's read Jeremiah chapter 1. The words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priests that were in Anathoth in the day of Benjamin, in the land of Benjamin, to whom the word of the Lord came in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. It came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the carrying away of Jerusalem captive in the 5th month. Then the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, "Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and I ordained thee a prophet unto the nations." Then said I, "Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a child." You identify with that? Verse 7, "But the Lord said unto me, Say not, I am a child, for thou shalt go to all that I shall send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. Be not afraid of their faces, for I am with thee to deliver thee, saith the Lord. Then the Lord put forth his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said unto me, Behold, I have put my words in thy mouth. See, I have this day set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms to root out and to pull down and to destroy and to throw down, to build and to plant. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Jeremiah, what seest thou? And I said, I see a rod of an almond tree. Then said the Lord unto me, Thou hast well seen, for I will hasten my word to perform it. And the word of the Lord came unto me the second time, saying, What seest thou? And I said, I see a seething pot, and the face thereof is toward the north. Then the Lord said unto me, Out of the north an evil shall break forth upon all the inhabitants of the land. For lo, I will call all the families of the kingdoms of the north, saith the Lord, and they shall come, and they shall set every one his throne at the entering of the gates of Jerusalem, and against all the walls thereof round about, and against all the cities of Judah. And I will utter my judgments against them, touching all their wickedness, who have forsaken me, and have burned incense unto other gods, and worshipped the works of their own hands. Thou therefore gird up thy loins, and arise, and speak unto them all that I command thee. Be not dismayed at their faces, lest I confound thee before them. For behold, I have made thee this day a defense city, and an iron pillar, and brazen walls against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, against the princes thereof, against the priests thereof, and against the people of the land. They shall fight against thee, but they shall not prevail against thee, for I am with thee, saith the Lord, to deliver thee." I have a Bible story book at home with this little story. Maybe Maybe you children can understand this a little bit better. Maybe it'll help the adults get a sense of how this call came to Jeremiah as well. A little bit of imagination mixed in here, but I think it's probably fairly realistic, fairly accurate. I'm going to start reading this little Bible story account of this same scripture I just read. In the village of Anathoth, just north of Jerusalem, a young man sat sleepless on the rooftop of his father's house. Weary, heavy-limbed, he had lain down on his mat at nightfall, dropping off to sleep immediately. About midnight, a startling dream had awakened him, and now he sat there, disturbed and frightened, all thought of sleep gone from his mind. In the dream that had dispelled his sleep, he had seen God standing on the rooftop, speaking to him. God had said, "Before I created you, I knew you, and before you were born, I appointed you a prophet to the nations." In terror, Jeremiah had protested, "But Lord, I cannot, for I am only a youth." "Do not say that," God had replied, "for you shall prophesy wherever I shall send you, and I will be with you. Be not afraid of the people, for I will save you from their plots." After that, the Lord stooped down and touched his mouth. "Behold, I have put my words into your mouth," he said. "Today I set you over nations and kingdoms, to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant." These terrifying words had awakened him, but as he sat on the rooftop, the presence seemed to be there still. He felt the touch of God's hand on his lips, soft and commanding. He? Jeremiah? A prophet? All his soul cried out against it. He did not want to be a prophet, for he had heard too much about the trials of the prophets. Their messages were disregarded and they were persecuted. People considered them a nuisance, and yet Judah needed a true prophet. Since the death of Isaiah and Micah, a country preacher who had lived about the same time as his better-known contemporary, no true prophet had risen in Judah. But Jeremiah did not want to be one. He belonged to Anathoth. Long ago, one of his distant forefathers, Abiathar the priest, had been banished by Solomon from Jerusalem. The great man who had known David and had helped him in his struggle against Saul had settled down in Anathoth, becoming a farmer priest. Like all his forefathers before him, Jeremiah too had been trained in this dual role. He would till the soil and serve the Lord, writing some occasional poems and psalms. He was a sensitive and timid youth, easily frightened, never forward, distrusting his own gifts and afraid of people. He knew that he was not cut out to be a prophet. However, the country was in dire need, and he had a call from God. Jeremiah walked to the far end of the roof and looked down on the hills below. Heavy dew lay on the grass. The moon had reached the squat, white watchtower of Hanamel, his cousin, whose vineyard was on the slope to his right. Down below, in the yard, an almond tree was in full bloom, heralding the coming of spring. He heard the first twitter of birds. Sunrise would not be long in coming. "No, I am not going to be a prophet," he said to himself. "I will forget about this vision and go on living as before. One has many kinds of dreams, but one should not take them too seriously." But he couldn't. There it was. I suppose we can choose to walk away from a call like that. But if we love God and if we believe God and serve God, we won't. Will we? His body shaking with fear, Jeremiah stood up and put on his robe. The sun was rising and the new day had begun. As he led the team of oxen and yoked them for plowing, he knew that the yoke of God was placed upon his neck. His future was mapped out for him. He was a man marked for the Lord. All right, what is your calling? Maybe you are called to be a prophet as well. Maybe you're not. But if you're not called to be a prophet, I am sure, and I'm going to broaden this up a little bit now, that you are called to some role by God. Maybe your call came differently than Jeremiah's, but does that make it any less sure or real? God can call however he wishes. Sure he can. He's God. And I was thinking about this thing of calls, and I was thinking of husbands and fathers and wives and mothers, teachers, neighbors. Am I called to be a neighbor? Sure. Christian young people, big sisters, helpers, cheerful assistants. Many of those calls maybe come about by our choices, maybe not, but they're a call nonetheless. Whatever, we are called by God to a task, and I would like to encourage us this morning not to despise the call that comes to you. Something I've struggled with already. I don't know why. I guess it's just my sinful nature. But, you know, there's times when you accept the call, there's times you feel like you're happy to serve God, and then there's times when you just don't want it. Often the call is not what I would choose on my own. Often it looks hard. Often my ability seems inadequate. Jeremiah, he wasn't a speaker. And God was telling him that he needed to go talk to these people, God's message. And he was timid. He couldn't preach. No way. That's what he thought. But you know what God said about that? God said, don't say that. Maybe God's finger pointed that time. Oh. You know, if you were whining to God about the role he has called you to, and God would say, don't say that, I hope I'd shut up. I hope you'd shut up. You might as well. And the reason God gave as that not being a problem, he says, I am with you. Oh, you mean that I can do anything if God is with me? Well, I hesitate to say any more about that. You do the math. All right, let's move on to a prophet's work here a little bit. I have 7 points, and I don't think I'm going to have the time, but I will give you the references. And if you would like to connect some of these references with the points I have and read it for yourself, that would be fine. But I have seven things that Jeremiah was called to, and 7 things that I believe a prophet was called to. And these points, I believe, hold true for modern-day prophets, modern-day ministers. Number one is to speak when God gives a message. Remember that that was a prophet's primary job, to speak when God gives a message. God told Jeremiah in chapter 2, verse 1, that was the first message that came to him. He said, go, cry in the ears of Jerusalem, speak. And for Jeremiah, it was often to a hostile audience. Probably happened a lot at the temple services, holiday crowds around there. Sometimes to angry kings and scornful officials. Didn't matter. God sent the prophet with a message, and he was to go and speak. A faithful prophet spoke up, no matter the audience or their attitude about what he would say. Did God ever call you to speak when you didn't feel like it? Have you ever felt timid, embarrassed? Or maybe you actually did it, and then it didn't seem to do any good. All it aroused was opposition and anger and mockery. Maybe we could just take the time to get a little bit of a picture of that in Jeremiah chapter 20. And we have him imprisoned here in the first part of the chapter. And then in verse 7, we have his lament. And this is Jeremiah sharing his feelings about how this prophet job was going for him. And he says in verse 7, O Lord, thou hast deceived me, and I was deceived. Thou art stronger than I, and hast prevailed. I am in derision daily. Everyone mocketh me. For since I spake, I cried out. I cried violence and spoil, because the word of the Lord was made a reproach unto me, and a derision daily. Then I said, I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name. But his word was in my heart as a burning fire shut up in my bones. And I was weary with forbearing, and I could not stay. Let's stop there. You know, at the end of the day, God controls the prophet. And it seemed like Jeremiah, in the sincerity of his heart, had accepted his job in such a way that when his flesh just failed him, and he says, I'm not going to talk anymore, this word just burned inside him. And I hope it still does in our hearts today. It's good when we're discouraged and intimidated to have God's word burn inside us, just burn. It's not about me, but it's God's word. It's about truth. And I can't shake the impact it has on my life and what it does inside of me. It actually seems like Jeremiah just couldn't keep quiet, in spite of his being a timid man, because he had this message that God had given him to share. And I don't know, maybe you fellow ministers can relate with this a little bit. Sometimes when we get a little bit lazy and slow, God has a way of putting his big hand on our shoulder, on our neck, and just keeping us going. I'm glad he does, but I really struggle with the momentum sometimes, you know, with God urging us on. All right, number two. The role of a true prophet was to cry, weep at wrong choices. And we could read many verses of Jeremiah crying and weeping. And I was thinking about what makes a true prophet like Jeremiah cry. Is it that are they self-pity tears? Is he feeling sorry for himself? Or is it something deeper than that? And I think that what made Jeremiah weep was that he was carrying the pain of seeing God's people make wrong choices. You know, he shared the truth, and they had the opportunity to choose right, and then they wouldn't. And he saw that, and he cared about them. He wanted them to experience God's blessing, but he knew, he understood that the choices that they were making were going to carry them into captivity and trouble. And it just pained him inside, and so he wept. I guess prophets have to be willing to hurt, is what it boils down to. I guess we have to be willing to weep sometimes, not too proud. Like I say, it's the weeping has to do with the concern we feel, not self-pity. And just to all of you here this morning, if a prophet has come to you with a message of truth, and maybe you've seen some tears in his eyes, and you felt that he really did care about you, don't despise that. Sometimes tears can be a powerful witness. All right, number three. A prophet prays for the people, God's people. A prophet understands that human beings are God's people, and a prophet will pray for those people. We could read some of Jeremiah's prayers. I won't. You will find one in chapter 32, verses 16 through 19. That's a special one, I think. Also, further down in the chapter, in verses 26 through 27, you can read some more of that prayer. What that in that situation, what had happened was Jeremiah was told by God to buy a field. The Babylonians encamped around Jerusalem, and Anathoth was under control of the Babylonians, and they held it. It was pretty much worthless land at that point because the enemy army had it under their control. And God told Jeremiah to go ahead and buy this property in the time of the siege, even though it wasn't worth anything, as an object lesson. And I think what I gather there in Jeremiah chapter 32, that Jeremiah was very perplexed about what he needed to do. He didn't understand it. And that's where he prayed to God about his situation. It wasn't just, in that case anyhow, for the people, although he did pray for the Israelites, the Jews, many times. Number four, the prophet exposes and rebukes false prophets. Jeremiah 23 is a chapter that has a lot of that in. And I believe that Jeremiah's motivation was not to contend. It was not a reaction. It was not a bias that he had, but it came from a sincere, humble heart, eager to stand for truth. That's what motivated him. That's what was behind it. Number five, the prophet shows a path forward. You know, one temptation that can come to prophets sometimes is it's all gloom and doom. And even though there's a place to warn, God never leaves people stranded. Although God will warn you of coming judgment, he will also offer mercy and give us a path forward. And that's what prophets did. They showed the people a path forward. And Jeremiah in chapter 29, when he prophesied to the people about the coming captivity, he told them that when the captivity would come and they would be taken captive, that what they were supposed to do is they were supposed to build houses and plant fields and marry and have children and live a normal life. And God had given them that message through Jeremiah to help them to understand when that time came what they should be doing. They weren't just to go to Babylon and sit down and rot. No. Well, they were to keep on. Number six, and this is similar to the one we just talked about, a prophet believes and looks forward to God's promises. You can read that work in chapter 31. Many times, when a prophet got a message from God, he would actually predict the future. He would say, God would tell him what to tell the people about future events, what was coming. And as they moved forward into the future with that understanding, they would hang on to the promises of God, that God was merciful and just and good. And number seven, a prophet obeys God even when he does not understand the message. Even when to obey God makes no sense. Once again, I'd like to make a little comparison to our lives. How about us? Do we obey God when he asks us to do something that doesn't make any sense? And I don't say this lightly. I mean, I'm not suggesting that you go down some path that's, what's the word I want? Strange, brainstorm, not wise. And yet, God does sometimes ask people to do things that when we get that understanding, it just, we can't see how it's going to end. And maybe we're confused, maybe we're perplexed, but we have a clear sense that this message is from God, this direction is from God. What do we do then? What did the prophet do? Well, you know what Ezekiel did? He lay on his side for, I think it was 2 years, or at least a year. I should check that out. That was one of the directions God gave Ezekiel. You go lay on your side in the city. Really? Yeah. I don't know if it was less strange to Ezekiel than it would be to us or not. But it was clear that it was from God. Well, we don't, I think for the most part, our culture, and I'm thinking of German, Swiss, whatever we all are, we don't really go that way too much. I mean, we like routine, and we like to understand. There's some strengths there. But I hope that when God gives us direction, like he did to the prophets, that he can get us to listen, get us to understand. If finally it comes down to, do I know what's best for my life, or does God know what's best? Am I expendable, or is my relationship with God expendable? These men, these prophets, are example of obedience and commitment to us, and their willingness to be used by God is commendable. Their willingness to serve the people is a good example. I would like to close a little bit with the reward of the prophet. Was Jeremiah's work worth it? The tears and the heart pains and the prison and the embarrassment and the rejection, the cost of life and comfort, was it worth it? And we would try to answer that question from a life perspective or from a human perspective. We would say, probably not. From a human comfort level, definitely not. From a good reputation among the people, fame, respect from others' point of view, probably not. In chapter 43, read that sometime, that's where Jeremiah was taken to Egypt. And Jeremiah had warned the people that they should not go to Egypt. They were afraid of the Babylonians coming in again. And so they got this idea that they were going to escape to Egypt. And God had told, through Jeremiah, told the people, don't do it. It's a bad idea. They wouldn't listen. And you know what? They took Jeremiah with them. And I wondered about that. You know what? If I was a minister with these people, would I go along or would I leave or what would I do? I don't know. But Jeremiah went along. They took him along. I think they forced him. And as far as we can see, that's where Jeremiah disappears from you. These disobedient Jews took him down to Egypt, and that's where he disappears from you. And somewhere, I suppose, in the desert sands of Egypt lie the bones of Jeremiah waiting for the resurrection. His spirit, I believe, waits in the great intermediate state hall with his Creator, waiting for the last word. And so do many other lives, and so will ours someday, soon, pretty soon. For Jeremiah, the difficulties of being a true and faithful prophet are over now. The time of speaking for God, of preaching the truth, foretelling an unpopular future, enduring mockery and shame, rotting in prison, hearing threats, feeling timid and fearful, holding pain for his loved ones in his heart, and crying and weeping for stubbornness and disobedience, and feeling his life and ministry slip away with little apparently to show for it, it's all over. Do you feel sorry for Jeremiah? I don't feel sorry for Jeremiah. Neither should you. Was his life wasted? Don't kid yourself. You know why I feel that way? Because history has proven him to be a true prophet. And so it will for all of us, whatever our role is. What was the test of a true prophet? It was what he predicted happened. And what God gave him to share came true. And so it did. It's interesting that this prediction that Jeremiah gave to the Jews about the Babylonians invading Egypt, historians for quite a few years said, well, there is no evidence that the Babylonians ever invaded Egypt. But they, here more recently, it's been a while back, I think, they found some archaeological records that do contain the account of Nebuchadnezzar invading Egypt. Of course, God knew it all the time. I would like to encourage us here in closing with being faithful in the role that God has called us to. And once more, let's broaden it away from ministers and prophets. What has God called you to? And maybe it's going hard. Maybe it's not easy. I read this story recently of a minister, a dream he had, and he dreamed that he was told to take a pick hammer and stand on a large rock and just hammer and hammer and hammer and hammer. And he did. And he was hammering, and nothing was happening. I mean, there was absolutely no cracks. The rock was intact as ever. He was just ineffectually hammering at the rock. So he decided that he was going to quit. Makes sense, right? And so he did. He quit. And in his dream, an angel came and told him that he said, "Why did you quit?" And he said, "Well, it wasn't doing any good. I just wasn't getting anywhere. I wasn't accomplishing anything." And the angel told him, "Your job is not to evaluate what you accomplish." The angel said, "Your job is to keep hammering." And in his dream, what do you think the minister did? He picked up his hammer. He went back at it. And I think many times, I'm not saying we should never evaluate. That's not really the point. But you know, as prophets and parents and Christians, whatever role we have, a lot of times that's the best way. Let God evaluate the results. Let's just keep the hammer going. That's what we're called to do. Let's kneel to pray.